Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Telford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Telford.
Hello, Josh Brown. Keeping up, as I say, pillars of the community, pillars of the podcast scene, keeping everything going. Three podcasts a week, my friend. Wind up, main show, probably UBP.
This is why I'm drinking so much coffee. I've got the coffee in the studio today because, man, otherwise I'm going to just lose my voice, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, if we don't do it, no one else will. So it's got to be done. Plus, we like doing it. Podcasts are good fun. Speaking of good fun, it's the remainder of the year and the amount of games that are coming. From August, I feel like we've had most of July off. In the UK, it's been raining every single day, at least in the Northeast. So what better time to sit down with various games? But in terms of specific titles and stuff, August is when everything kicks back in. So we've done a big old list of everything coming out in August that seems to be of note with the release dates, but we're not going to do it in release order because the first game would then be Baldur's Gate 3. We're just going to go through some stuff. It'll kind of fall in order anyway.
See, you said this before we started recording, like that explains itself. Why do you hate Baldur's Gate 3, Scott?
I love Baldur's Gate.
Why do you not want to start with that?
I just want to talk about Armored Core. That's the thing, doing the rounds in the news media. To be fair, as I'm looking at the list that we've made, it actually is in order anyway. So I've just moved Baldur's Gate up a little bit.
Fair enough.
So no. And then Texas Chainsaw is in the wrong place. It doesn't matter.
Armored Core is an A. It makes sense to start there alphabetically.
Yes, exactly.
I'm going to ignore the fact that there's another game on this list beginning with A. Doesn't matter. We'll start with Armored Core.
Don't worry about it. There's one beginning with B as well. There's two of them beginning with B. But no, it's fine. Point being, Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon, currently doing the rounds in terms of hands-on gameplay preview stuff, which we haven't done. We didn't sign up for those things. We're going to dive in at launch time. Unless Mr. FromSoft gets in touch beforehand, and we'll dive in a little bit earlier. But Armored Core Fires of Rubicon, Armored Core 6 Fires of Rubicon, coming out on the 25th of August. I feel like that is one of the biggest sort of headline stealers of the month overall, or potentially of the year, because it's another FromSoft game. But I don't feel like the hype is there for it. It's just kind of like, I think because it's such a vested franchise, and it's such a, like, there are five previous ones. I've not played any Armored Cores.
Right.
It's like, I don't really care. And then when I watched the gameplay, I was like, I care less about this now.
Yeah? No, well, the thing is, right, I think, one, it's testament to how strong the year is that a From Software game is kind of, you know, flying under the radar, as it were. But also, yeah, this is definitely a more niche product from them. I'm a lapsed Armored Core fan. Like, right, I can't say I'm hardcore in the community or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed them when I was a kid. I loved the level of customization. And as someone who's not really into mechs, I always thought that was quite impressive that it managed to get me in. But yeah, looking at the previews that have dropped for this game, I don't think it's necessarily going to win over people who were maybe on the fence or who weren't maybe into the series before or aren't really necessarily into that style of game. For me, it looked kind of exactly how I expected
I think it looks gorgeous, like in terms of the art style and everything. I love like the amount of missiles coming at you. The thing that I thought was really fascinating by it, and I am going to check it out. It was just that, like, it's one of those things where I've always heard about Armored Core. I've always like seen it be played in various places, but I never played it myself. And then watching this, being like, oh, like levels are, they're about 90 seconds long, apparently, which I guess is like a standard Armored Core thing. But you're sort of like, the customization side of it is really heavy. Then you're throwing your mech into these areas. It's kind of almost like tunnel vision. You're charging down different places, taking out various enemies.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they're more like arena fights or whatever. But they're all, it's almost like a fighting game. You're sort of checking in, doing like a quick thing, and then you're back in the customization screen, re-spec your mech, and then go back in again. And I really like the idea of that. It's going to depend on how checkpointy it is. How much how much sort of progress am I losing? Like, how much fun can I have with the customization? It's a weird thing, and because I haven't grappled with it yet, and it looks so different to everything else, especially with From Software's rollout across the last 10 years. I'm just curious about it. It's not grabbing me yet, but I'm curious.
Well, this is it. This is why I think it's such a funny release, because when they announced it, I thought that's interesting. They're going back to Armored Core. How are they going to take what they've learned over the past 10 years and apply it to this franchise? Are they going to change the franchise? And then I've seen these extensive gameplay previews, and I've gone, That looks like an Armored Core game.
Right, okay.
I like that, but like I said, it's not going to necessarily convince anyone because, yes, it does have that style of gameplay where you're jumping in, you're crossing these vast areas, you're blowing up all of these enemies. Mm. And to me, that gameplay style is very fun. It's very frantic. It actually reminded me a lot in the trailer of Returnal's gameplay style, ooh, where you've got like a lot of strafing, you've got a lot of projectiles coming at you, different sort of levels of speed, different levels of momentum, all of that stuff that you're juggling. Which obviously I'm a huge fan of, and I thought that was very appealing to me. I will agree that some of it looks a little bit impenetrable still, and the kind of things that I bounced off in Armored Core back in the day, I can kind of see myself bouncing off here, and that is kind of more like the UI and the presentation more than anything else, and the kind of bite-sized nature of it, and I'm using that relatively, of course. But I'm intrigued. It didn't necessarily blow me away, but the previews that were saying this just feels incredible to actually play moment to moment.
60 FPS, baby.
I definitely get that from the gameplay videos itself. So it's going to be an interesting title once it drops, I think.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like I'm very curious how it plays. There's a lot of aerial combat going on. It's weird because it's so mech focused, and assumedly there is this bigger scale to it, but you're fighting other mechs of the same size in areas that are really big and like valleys and everything. So the sense of scale it could be anything. You could be playing as humans, you could be playing as superheroes, like in terms of the scale side of it.
This is where I'm going to disagree with you.
Please do.
Because I was watching the VATI video. Big deep dive the into video. The game. Yes, yeah, very good. And they had some gameplay in there where they were kind of fighting in these larger scaled areas with these massive structures. And honestly, the big takeaway for me was, oh, the scale looks really impressive here, you know, just in terms of how it was positioning you sometimes as this kind of tiny mech in this massive landscape against these massive structures. And I hope to see more of that in the game itself rather than what you were kind of getting.
I want to step onto humans.
I think, with their,
I want to pick a human up and throw him at another human.
Rather than just mishing around these kind of barren landscapes that do kind of feel like a little bit nondescript and kind of lose that sense of bigness that you kind of want. For me, I'm going to be really interested if you get it to see how you take to the customization aspect, because obviously like these games are kind of meant to be replayed with different builds in mind, like swapping in parts, completely changing your playstyle and whatnot. And that was kind of the thing that always drew me to it, the level and extensiveness over the control that you had over the mechs and the weapons that you were using. Like, I would spend most of my time in the screens doing that rather than playing the game.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Rather than playing the game. And I don't know if I have the patience for that now because it felt so novel back in the 2000s. Like, no one else was really doing that, or at least that I knew of at the time. But now I've done that, and I want to see how they're innovating on that, and I want to see how deep that is going forward.
I hope it's dense AF. Like, it reminds me a lot of like the, if you really want to get stuck into like Forza or Gran Turismo's car customization stuff, and you can like tweak every little valve in a car.
Yeah.
And I sometimes like doing that stuff, but I don't know enough in real life about exactly how much a car, I can go to a point, but then it's like, I hope that they've done that for mechs. It's like, you are literally like, you know, customizing every last part of this mech. But yeah, just the idea that like the next game from the Elden Ring folk is just out in another few weeks. That's kind of nuts. I know that it's like an old school IP, but still.
I love that From Software just do what they want, and they're not beholden to franchises. I know this is a big franchise, but it's not anywhere near on the same level as a Dark Souls or an Elden Ring or a Bloodborne or even a Sekiro. And I like that they have this massive hit that they dropped last year, and they're like, yeah, but we've also got this cool, you know, niche return to a franchise that we haven't touched in a long, long time, and we're going to focus on that next and then move on to the next big thing.
When are they going to do a new Tenchu?
Throwing that up. When are they going to do a new Tenchu?
That's the only thing that they put their name to over the years that they've not gone back to.
Hey, if they can do an Armored Core just for me, they can do a Tenchu just for you.
You would think so. You would hope so. It's interesting noting that Armored Core is published by Bandai Namco again, and it's like, I feel like they sort of dabble. They did Bloodborne with Sony, and like Activision did Sekiro with them, and Bandai Namco just seem to be the ones that are just like, you guys do you.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we're cool with you just doing you, and that results in them doing another Armored Core.
That's a good point. You know, obviously they have this history with Bandai Namco, but then they went to Activision for Sekiro, which remains like the weirdest move ever. Like, I have no idea how that happens.
But like, tap dancing over laser beams to get that game over the finish line in their own way.
Absolutely.
There's not a whiff of Activision in that thing.
It makes me wonder what we'll see next, because obviously we know that there is DLC coming out for Elden Ring. Is that all we get from them next year, presumably? Now I can't see that dropping this year.
There was that rumor or whatever, there was like Brandon Sanderson talked about writing Elden Ring 2. There was that thing about he was the next like tapped author. And like, I love the idea that the Elden Ring franchise has different tapped authors every time. And just bring them in to do a different game. And there was something that seemed to be around the idea of the next Elden Ring already being in motion and whatever. And like their turnaround is one game nearly every year anyway. So it's like, I mean, there's conversation on social media about how much they're reusing the same engine over and over again. But for me, I thought it looked gorgeous in Armored Core. So I'm like, I'm always going to be gameplay focused anyway.
I mean, I like those kind of visual innovations. And I must admit, going into Elden Ring, one of the best games of all time, like there was a tiny part of me, like a 0.1% part of me that was like, I kind of wish this looked like the Demon's Souls remake. But ultimately, I don't care, because even though they do reuse a lot of assets, they've not made a below 9 out of 10 game for me yet. No. And they've released so many games over the past 10 years, and that's crazy.
Yeah, they continue to be on the form of their careers. Like, at the minute, Elden Ring is the apex. I don't think Armored Core is going to beat that, but I don't think it's meant to either. I think this is just meant to be like, we can do this at this point. We can't just, but by the way, we can also satisfy these hardcore fans and make one of the most in-depth, like, mech customization games ever, which is cool. Baldur's Gate, you mentioned at the beginning, and that's the first game of August, first big game of August, out on the 3rd of August. I don't have the stomach for this right now. Just did a whole bunch of Diablo. I've done about 7 JRPGs in a row. I can't do this as well.
Neither can I. But as someone who is not at all invested in this franchise, the more I see about Baldur's Gate 3, the more I think, God damn, I'm going to have
to play it. It looks gorgeous.
And it's dropping in August on PC, but it's not coming to at least the PlayStation consoles until September, where it's going hilariously, I think, head to head with Starfield. So we'll no doubt talk about it again when we talk about like September's releases. But yeah, this is something that I'm totally with you. I can't stomach right now, but I am very excited to eventually get to set the time aside and see what all the fuss is about, because I've not played one of these before. I've heard about its reputation.
You never played Dark Alliance?
Nah. Oh. Never played any of these things. Never been a Dungeons & Dragons guy, Scott Silver. What can I say?
Yeah, okay.
But this one, just the way they're talking about it, the level of depth that seems to be there. As an RPG fan, I'm looking at that thinking, oh, you bastards, you might have got me in here.
You got me in. I feel like, Baldur's Gate, my only frame of reference is the two Dark Alliance games, and the first one is like one of my most treasured game experiences of all time, something I play with my best friends across high school. Every weekend we would just play Baldur's Gate, and so I absolutely loved the IP back then. But I feel like it's sort of, obviously it's kept going, but this is a huge deal. This is a return to, like, you know, like the foundations kind of thing, and they're giving it to Larian, who are like the Divinity Original Sin team. It's like, if you're going to give it to a well-known team at this point, a team full of experts, then that feels like a marriage made in heaven kind of thing. So yeah, I haven't thought that much more to say on Baldur's Gate, but I feel like it'll be what I thought Diablo was, where it's like just a meaty top-down RPG experience. Diablo gets in its own way too much. There's too many random like teasers for loot and season passes and whatever, and the fact that the enemies level with you makes the whole thing pointless, where I'm just like, well, what even is this? Diablo's a weird thing. It's just a weird, I feel like I'm locking myself in a cupboard playing it. I'm just sort of like, I'll go in here for a bit and I'll come out and I feel nothing.
I can't believe you're still playing it, to be honest.
I haven't delved in a couple of weeks, but I keep delving back in because I want to get my money's worth. I paid 70 bones for the damn thing.
Understandable.
So I'm like, I should play a bit more of it, but it's just the same thing. It's just the same. Nothing happens in it. I don't understand it.
I thought you had played Diablo before.
That's what I bounced off. I tried Diablo 3 about five. I've got like 5 copies of Diablo 3 because I keep getting it on different systems over the years. I was like, no, it must be me. It can't be the game. It must be me. Everyone loves this game. I'm going to play more of it. And then I was like, well, Diablo 4, I love the art style a lot more. I like Diablo 3 fine enough. But yeah, I bounced off 3, like 5-6 times. I was like, oh, Diablo 4, gotta be the one. It looks gorgeous. I'll give it a shot. It's the same thing.
Listen, I know this was a long time ago, but I did a similar thing with Diablo 2, where I was loving it while I was in it. Like, I love the art style. I love the gameplay loop. But then when I just kind of took a few days away from it, I kind of had the realization of, Why would I go back? I've got my fill of that, and then I never touched it again. So I suspect something might happen with Diablo 4. I still want to play it, but like you said, for £70, it's a big investment.
Diablo 4 as well, like the opening is so strong, and like, you know, you're hanging out with Ralph Ineson, like big old Finchie's the one bringing you in, and the opening is so good. There's way more story in there than I was ever expecting, and it's nice and haunting. It's really gothic and awesome, but then when it opens up, and like, it takes forever to get a mount, and it's just like, you're just going place to place, the dialogue, it's well written enough, but there's just nothing there. It's just like, oh, evil force needs to be vanquished. Yeah, of course it does.
Yeah.
Like, what else is there to this? But anyway, Baldur's Gate, I feel like, will be a more authored version of what I thought, and it won't be, I think Larry and I are too they're too good a team to be sort of brought in by too many microtransactions and things like that.
Hopefully. I know it's been in early access for a while and it's finally getting like the proper release now. It's a game for me that I'm going to keep my eye on, but I just don't know when I'm going to fit it in. Yeah. Obviously, I won't be able to play it until September, and it comes out the day as Starfield, my most anticipated game of the year, so I'll be prioritizing that. Baldur's Gate, if it reviews well and people are enjoying it, I'm kind of already mentally setting aside as my January game. You know, January is usually a write-off. It's for catching up on things. Maybe I'll have enough time in that month to get into a big chunky beast like this.
Get into a big chunky beast. That's ironically, that's exactly what the Baldur's Gate 3 footage is showing.
Is that right?
You might not know what that's in reference to, but the people who do will know exactly what I'm talking about.
Very good.
The bear on Disney+. But also, I feel like the way that this is coming together, like I need it to be as co-op-y as Dark Alliance was, because I want to be able to play through it with my wife and go through the whole thing. We did a big chunk of Divinity Original Sin together, but we didn't finish it. And I'm just hoping that Baldur's Gate is a bit more propulsive overall than that. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is out on the 18th of August. I don't care about this game, but you do.
Oh, I really do, man. I really do. And I'm not, as I've got on record saying a bunch of times, I'm not even someone who necessarily loves the asymmetrical multiplayer gimmick, but I love Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I love Friday the 13th, to be honest.
You love Friday the 13th.
Dude, it's so good.
See, I could never like fully get into it. I played like a decent chunk of it, especially when it came to, I think it was PlayStation Plus, or Game Pass, one of those things. I tried to get into it and enjoyed myself, but could never really crack that. Could never really crack Dead by Daylight.
No, either. Same.
But I'm hoping this is the one. I really am. And I think it's because this is the franchise that I kind of adore. Like, I like even the bad Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies. Like, I'm the only person on earth who defends the one with Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey in it.
When you said plural, I was like, is there more than one? They did the reboot thing.
But this, like I said, I'm hoping it's the one that gets me in, because I think aesthetically it looks like as gritty and as grimy as you'd kind of want. I'm kind of cautiously optimistic about it. I'm going to wait to see how it reviews. But like Call of Duty Warzone was the game that kind of cracked battle royales for me, I'm hoping this is the game that kind of cracks asymmetrical multiplayer games. Because I love Evil Dead, but I wouldn't necessarily class that in the same kind of realm as the other games we were just talking about, because that's so much more offensive based. And this one, I know, does have more offensive capabilities, and there is kind of more variation in that respect. But like, Evil Dead was practically a four-player co-op shooter as much as it was this asymmetrical hide-and-seek thing.
Yeah, I'll say that I love Friday the 13th, but it's because it worked as a multiplayer game. Like, I had a room full of people. We were taking turns. Like, that was what it worked at. Everyone's pointing at, like, oh my God, he's right over there. Like, hide in the bush, do whatever. Like, I don't think it obviously would work to a point if you were just sitting in a room by yourself, but it almost needed the like meta teen horror vibe of like, we're all screaming and we're all like, it was like, you know, I just add alcohol made that work.
Right.
So it was like, I don't know if that would work more solo, but I feel like Texas Chainsaw, if you were playing that with a room full of people and you're trying to survive as long as you can past the controller thing.
I hope so.
Then that was what made that work for me. That's out on the 18th. Atlas Fallen is out on the 10th of August. And I feel like Atlas Fallen is kind of just, I don't think it's going to bomb, but it's so overlooked. I feel like obviously there's the whole thing going on with Lords of the Fallen, which was Atlas Fallen is the next game from that team from Deck 13 who did the original Lords of the Fallen in 2014. I never knew there was that weird shakeup with the sequel was announced. I forget who their publisher is, but the sequel was announced after 2014. I think it was in 2017 when they announced the sequel. But it's not the original devs. They went away and did and are now doing Atlas Fallen, which is more of like a sci-fi infused open kind of, it looks like it's set in like various deserts and kind of, it's like a way more open-ended thing. And then the Lords of the Fallen sequel has been given to Hexworks. So it's like all of the kind of the cultural cachet, whatever there is of Lords of the Fallen, I feel like it's a known name because it did the rounds in 2014, is now going towards the new Lords of the Fallen game, which I forget the name of. It's like Lords of the Fallens.
Yeah, just like the Lords of the Fallen, I think.
And so that's kind of taken their thunder. And I feel sorry for Deck 13 because I actually really did like the original Lords of the Fallen, more for the time, just because of the year it released in. We didn't have a shiny Dark Souls at the time. It felt like a nice, fun, like I liked it as a chunky, almost World of Warcraft style art aesthetic thing applied to Dark Souls. And I can get on board with giant shoulder pads and everything else.
Right.
So I had a lot of fun with Lords of the Fallen. But I feel like Atlas Fallen deserves the whatever hype you want to apply to the new Lords game. Like, Atlas Fallen is that team. So if you ever cared about Lords of the Fallen, the original, you should care about Atlas Fallen and not the new Lords of the Fallen.
He's where I'm hilariously going to have the exact opposite opinion from you here, because I'm looking forward to the Lords of the Fallen this year precisely because it's not that original team.
Okay.
Like, I did not vibe with the original game at all. Those kind, that kind of aesthetic that you're describing there was not
get
for
your
me
shoulder pads
at
away
all.
From me.
Get the kind of the almost sluggishness of the gameplay. Mm. I didn't necessarily.
It was quite slow.
Either, yeah, which I don't mind games being slow. I mean, I've played loads
of
Souls like, but there was something about it. It just didn't feel as good as I wanted it to feel. But looking at the trailers for the new version, I'm kind of pleased that they've reinvented it the way they have, at least from the trailers. I'm like, yeah, maybe this looks more like a Souls clone than the original ever did, but it kind of looks like something that I want to play way more. And Atlas Fallen, sadly, and it sounds like I'm personally attacking the developers here. I'm not. It's just two unfortunate aesthetics. I didn't love their aesthetic on The Lords of the Fallen, and I really don't like it on Atlas Fallen.
I don't love it either. I'm just curious what they're doing, because I feel like it's one of those things where, like, I feel like Lords of the Fallen got brought up a lot, obviously, since 2014, and I'm just curious what that team does next. And I'm not going to mention Immortals of Avium soon, but I feel like Atlas Fallen and Immortals of Avium have the same aesthetic, where it's like you're making a game that is geared towards loot coloring. Like, it's geared towards, you know, pops of gold, blue, purple, whatever, against a more beige backdrop so that they pop more. And I feel like the default is it's very Fortnite, but it is, like, in terms of the loot colors being the thing that draws your eye, that is what they're going towards, and that's the thing that dominates Immortals of Avium's art style for me, which to me is extremely off-putting.
I said this when we were talking about the conferences around what was known as E3 season, some games fest season, I guess you describe it as now, and this aesthetic is like my least favorite aesthetic right now, that kind of fantasy sci-fi mix of these bright colors, this kind of futuristic looking armor, juxtaposed with these really bland, in my opinion, orange deserts. There's something about that just puts me off instantly, which is maybe really harsh because the games might be incredible. I find it very uninspired that a lot of these games are kind of going down that route, and I've had my fill of fighting in these barren deserts, Scott Telford. I want more environmental design. Even Final Fantasy 16.
I was going to say Dalmekia.
Yeah, I really loved, but when I got to Dalmekia, it managed to, you know, vary it up enough with those lush kind of ravines that were, you know, going through and like really interesting mountainscapes, but sometimes you were just in a bland desert firing off these really colorful spells, and I kind of see that and my brain just shuts down in the same way that gray modern military first-person shooters in the late 2000s kind of shut my brain down.
Yeah, I feel like it's become I don't think it's overused just yet, but we're right on the cusp of it. I think once Immortal comes out and the one that we just said comes out, I feel like Forspoken sort of had that as well. It wasn't in deserts, but it was in that just big open world with colorful spells in the middle. Like, there's something about that is already getting quite tiresome. I think Destiny ran it into the ground as well. It's that sort of, like, I don't know, amalgamation of Destiny's art aesthetic, Fortnite's art aesthetic, or just generic loot stuff. How do we make you notice the loot popping off the character?
This was better.
Or the spell.
At least it looked better, I think, than the games we've just talked about. But even in Jedi Survivor, a game that I love, when you got to, like, the desert planet and you were kind of running around there, I just thought, I've done this so many
desert's
times.
Desert's the new sewers.
Maybe.
I don't want to be here. No, just put me anywhere. I'm sick of being in the sewers.
I see a desert level and I'm like, why have none of you taken cues from the Mad Max game, which made deserts interesting?
Yeah, if you're gonna put me in a desert, have me besieged by various warriors, or like some sort of thing that like gives me something to do. But yeah, Atlas Fallen is out on the 10th. The Lords of the Fallen isn't out until October. But yeah, I'm just curious, if you're ever a Lords of the Fallen fan, it's just kind of interesting seeing how much they pivoted and how much, at least to me, I feel like the optics of that game is just buried. I feel like that original dev team is kind of largely buried, and the brand has taken over, and the Lords of the Fallen is the thing that's getting all the eyeballs. Bomb Rush Cyberpunk's out on the 18th of August. Now, this is such a like cult revival kind of game. It's the Jet Set Radio spiritual successor. And I'm blanking on the name of the composer, but I'm sure they've got the original composer back.
Yeah.
Jet Set Radio is just like a cel-shaded Tony Hawk's to a lot of people, or a cel-shaded aggressive inline, if you want to do a deep pull, because it was rollerblady on Dreamcast or whatever. And then there was a PlayStation 2 version as well. It just is that sort of like trend that we had a lot of across the last couple of years, where a lot of big publishers wouldn't greenlight a remake or wouldn't just re-release a game. So a lot of indie teams were like, fine, we'll do it ourselves. Mm. Like Dangerous Driving doing it for Burnout or something like that. There was like that game that was like Advance Wars as well. But yeah, it feels like one of them. It feels like it's just the team going like, Sega won't put Jet Set Radio out for whatever reason. And I think a remake has since been confirmed.
Yeah.
Probably because of this. But that's finally out on the 18th of August. I don't know if you've seen any screenshots or anything.
Not seen a
very colorful, Josh.
Didn't know what this game was until you described it as a Jet Set Radio inspired title. There's something about like those kind of games that aren't my thing,
right?
Because I love Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, but I kind of love that because it's kind of baked into at least a little bit of realism. Obviously, the skateboarding itself is incredibly arcadey and silly.
I know what you mean.
But you're using, like, realistic, quote-unquote, locations. You're using the realistic skateboarders. You're using the realistic brands. Mm-hmm. And when kind of, I know this isn't necessarily the same thing, but when a sports game or whatever kind of just becomes... You're only playing it for an exaggerated version of the sport. Mm-hmm. I'm never necessarily there for that. Like, the reason
that's entirely why I'm there.
Well, this is it, right? The reason I love football games is because they have, like, the official teams, and I want to play as my favorite teams and my favorite players and see my favorite stadiums. So when those games don't have it, I'm like, well, I'm not here to play football necessarily. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm here to simulate, at least. Whether that's like a real simulation or just kind of in terms of seeing a realistic representation of the things that I already see in real life, and I want to simulate that side of it. I'm not for the moment to moment gameplay.
I'm all for arcade sports. Like, I want my arcade racing games, I want my arcade sports games. Give me Red Card Soccer any day. I'll take that over any Pro Evo or FIFA.
Obviously, the old wrestling games. I think we talked about this when Hamflet, Michael Games Hamflet was on the podcast. And those old wrestling games like SmackDown, Here Comes the Pain, and SmackDown Just Bring It, they're obviously exaggerated, they're heightened, they're fantasy in a lot of ways. But because they had the realistic wrestlers, they had authentic moves that they would use, they had the authentic arenas, like I managed to love them way more than I did any of the arcade wrestling games that I played that kind of just used their likeness but got too silly with it. There's something about...
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
These kind of games, authenticity that you want in this.
That's exactly it. That I need to kind of straddle that line between pure arcade fun, but a level of authenticity as well. And I know that we've kind of gone off on a tangent. And I shouldn't even like criticize this game for that, and I absolutely am not. I just thought that was Something I look for, and I don't know if I'm just being weird about that. Or no, if anyone I think else does
well,
that.
Back in the day when Jet Set first came out, I remember it was one of Jules' favorite games, and I remember when we first started, when I first met him in like 2015 or 16 or whatever, we bonded a bit over Jet Set. But I never adored Jet Set. I was always a Tony Hawk's fan, and It was like it wasn't because of the more realistic side, but I always thought Tony Hawk's was more malleable. By the time the Jet Set came to PlayStation 2, Tony Hawk's I think was on Tony Hawk's 2 or 3, so you were doing manuals, you were chaining stuff together more. There was just more of a flow to that game, and I love the aesthetic of Jet Set because it is cel shaded, and I love Sega music. It's like in my veins, and so like I was like, this should be my dream.
Yeah.
And at the time, it just didn't flow like Tony Hawk's did. And so I'm kind of hoping that because you know, you've learned all these lessons from the last 20 plus years of you know, like skateboarding games or whatever, and we've got the Tony Hawk's remakes that they can compare to or whatever. I mean, this has been in development for ages, that they can just do a gorgeous, like, you know, Sega music sounding thing without it being official, skateboarding game. And the composer is called Hideki Naganuma. I didn't know his name before, but yeah, just it has all the right vibes.
That is
I just
sick,
hope
man.
It plays well. It looks gorgeous. So I'm looking forward to that. That's out on the 18th. Immortals of Avium, like we mentioned before, out on the 22nd of August. Anything else you want to say about that?
I like that it exists. Mm. I like that it's an EA Originals. I like that they're doing something a little bit different. It's visually not for me, but it's one that I'm not going to write off. I'll wait for reviews to see how well it does, what the critical consensus is. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll jump in if it like gets a price drop or if it comes to a Game Pass or PlayStation Plus equivalent. But yeah, ultimately the aesthetic is kind of a big barrier between me and the game.
A weird thing, right? I don't know if it's just me, but you know Ghostwire Tokyo, how it was you were using projectiles, you were ostensibly shooting enemies like with a gun, but from your hands. There's something about Spellcraft in first person that puts me off.
Ah.
And I didn't finish. I love all the idea of like twisting, you contorting your hands like Scarlet Witch, and you do all these like cool finger movements and cool spells come out and whatever. I like that in theory, but there's something about it was in Ghostwire Tokyo, and it looks like it's in Immortals of Avium as well, where it's like, just give me a gun, just let me have the speed of the weapon kind of thing, where instead of there's only so fast that things will fire out of hands, it seems, in some of these games. And there's something that's a little bit off in terms of the feel. Like, I never finished Ghostwire Tokyo, even though I loved everything about it other than the gameplay, because it just kind of devolved into too much open world, you know, checkbox stuff. So it's one of those things where I'm curious about Immortals of Avium, but it's already up against the art style, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
I want to support it because it is like a new IP and it has the budget, and it's backed by EA and everything. And it's sort of one of those ones that I imagine EA shareholders / the people at the top will say, well, we did the original thing and no one bought it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I want to be able to support it and hope that it's better than it looks so far, I guess.
Yeah, I agree as well. You know, this is the game on this list that I'm like really wanting to be good. I want the story to be interesting. I want the gameplay to have that energy to it. But I also agree with you that kind of first-person Spellcraft thing, I don't mind it. I think it like works really well on controller. But because there are a few VR games that do the exact same thing, obviously I'm looking at this thinking, I wish I could play this in VR. I want to play this in VR because that obviously lends itself so well to like the hand tracking and like you're literally casting.
Oh, the PSVR 2 spells. As well. Like specific fingers and everything.
Absolutely. I know there are a few games like that already, but obviously not necessarily with the budget of this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those ones that I, when they randomly announced it, it was like, oh, this looks kind of cool, looks kind of fresh. And then obviously you see the loot stuff that we mentioned before, and then it's the EA logo. And I was like, I love the EA Originals line, like so far, like Unravel and It Takes Two, and that one with the prison escape thing.
Way Out.
Way Out was awesome. And it's just like, yeah, I like EA having EA Originals. And I want to, like, I almost want to support that just to prove to the rest of the company that it's worth doing. And I feel like EA is kind of rounding the bend on the end of their sort of multiplayer microtransaction push. Like, the baton of hate's been passed to Warner Brothers at the minute.
Yeah.
And so it's like EA's doing all the single player stuff and Star Wars and whatever. But yeah, that's out on the 22nd, so we'll see how that thing goes down. Blasphemous 2 is out on the 24th of August.
Dominate
your life.
I cannot wait for Blasphemous 2. Man, you know, we just talked about art styles there, and they're incredibly important to me. Like, they can make or break a game, they can get me interested in something, they can put me at a distance or something. And I'll never forget just seeing the first Blasphemous years after it came out in a PlayStation sale, looking at the key art.
I'm amazed that you picked it up.
Yeah, then jumping into the screenshots, and even though, like, Well, at the time, I thought it was more of a 2D platformer than it was like a 2D Souls-like game. But just looking at the art style, I thought, I need to play this. You know, I need to try it out. And I jumped in, and I loved it. I thought it was like just dripping with atmosphere. Loved the design. Thought the combat itself was like really, really engaging. Yeah. It was challenging. It was difficult, but it was really satisfying. Mm-hmm. And by the end of that game, I was kind of in love. So, I mean, looking forward to Blasphemous 2 all year. And I think it comes out like the day before Armored Core, or really close to Armored Core. Oh, yeah. And for as much as I love FromSoft, I think it's a testament to how much of an impression the first game made that Blasphemous 2 is above it on the list, probably.
I feel like for Blasphemous, it's like there was that couple of games, Salt and Sanctuary, that were like the 2D Souls games. And they are and they aren't, like UI-wise, they are. Art style-wise, they didn't do it for me. I thought the character models were too like cutesy and a bit too rounded, even though it is overall a dark aesthetic. Blasphemous nails the Souls vibe without feeling like a Souls ripoff.
Yeah.
It just feels like it's directly inspired by it, and it has that gross out kind of, oh my god, what the hell is that creature thing coming at me vibe. And it, like you said, it just plays so well. I feel like it is kind of overlooked as like when we talk about like, you know, really like landmark 2D stuff, like the Shovel Knights of the world or whatever, Blasphemous and the Hollow Knights, like Blasphemous deserves that audience. Like, it definitely has it because it's been able to get a sequel. But yeah, I'm curious what they add to it, because I thought it was pretty, I mean, I never finished Blasphemous 1. I feel like I put a lot of time into it, but I just didn't finish it. And I'm curious what they add to it. Like, do they end up bringing in some stuff like what Elden Ring's done, like more support things to make sure people do get through it?
Yeah.
Or whether they double down on the difficulty side of it.
It's interesting because the first one had this really, again, Dark Souls inspired, like, more Metroidvania inspired, like interconnected world where, you know, you couldn't get to everywhere initially, or you could, but the enemies were too tough that, you know, you were just getting slapped back to the checkpoint every time. But I wonder how they literally build on that, maybe adding more layers, maybe adding more verticality, maybe adding more biomes that you can go through that you can, you know, use to kick shortcuts down to other levels and environments. I think that's a cool way to build on it. Like, same with the bosses. The bosses in the first game are spectacular to look at and they're spectacular to fight. Mm-hmm. I didn't play the DLC in spite of how much I loved the game. Just, you know, it was one of those that
it just felt done.
I had like, I loved my time with it that I almost didn't want to kind of test the waters. Mm-hmm. And there was so much other stuff coming out. But obviously, with this being a proper sequel, I agree with you. I want to see what they've added, what they've refined, how they've made the original better, and how I think, because I loved Blasphemous 1, but when I played Hollow Knight, I kind of thought, oh, this is it. This is how you do a kind of like Souls-inspired Metroidvania 2D action game in an interconnected world. And I want to see kind of Blasphemous kind of go for that crown and be like, okay, you're in my opinion, Hollow Knight, you're like the absolute king of this stuff. Mm-hmm. You're like right at the very top. Mm-hmm. Let's go toe-to-toe with you with that.
That'd be cool if they're like more sort of, because the movement in Blasphemous is almost one of the biggest identifying factors. Like, it has like a weight to it. You're not ping-ponging around the screen too much like you kind of are in Hollow Knight or whatever. Yeah, I'm curious about it. It's one of those things that I always wanted to finish, but at some point I was just getting slaughtered by bosses and enemies and I was like, I can't keep doing this. But it is extremely well put together. Next one down, you've got Firewall Ultra on the 24th.
Yes, finally, this has got a release date as of last week. This is the PSVR 2, I think, first-person shooter, and I kind of wanted to bring it up. I'm not going to spend too long on it because it's PSVR 2, but I'm really worried about it, Scott. I'm really, really worried about it. They've kind of been strangely quiet about the game all year.
Kind of with PSVR 2, you'd barely even know it was a thing.
Well, even then, with PSVR 2, yeah, they've fumbled the bag in sort of selling it, but at least they kind of put a big focus on it, I thought, in their PlayStation Showcase. You know, they showed off a bunch of games, but they didn't show Firewall Ultra, and I thought, for a big PSVR 2 title that's coming out this year, why didn't you show it? It wasn't mentioned in their shareholder presentation when they did their yearly thing about upcoming titles. So I honestly thought it might have got delayed outside of this year, but they have confirmed the August release date. They showed off a new trailer, and it just looked a little bit janky.
Right.
After playing stuff like Pavlov, which is, I think it's running on Unreal Engine 5, like, looks beautiful, nice. Has this great sense of tactility. You know, you've got like manual reloads, you've got all of this stuff that you can do inside the virtual world. Mm-hmm. what they showed off and the things that they've said about there being, you know, no manual reloads or anything like that in the game, I just kind of wonder if it's not going to be as advanced or as pushing the kind of boat out with its mechanics compared to the original that, like, I think a lot of people are expecting. I think it's going to play maybe too similar to the original, which was great for the tech that it was on, but now with the advancements that PSVR 2 has made and how good those controllers are, I kind of want to see that gameplay be properly leveled up. And just from what I've seen from it so far, I'm cautiously optimistic. I want it to be really good. I want it to surprise us. I want it to be better than the trailers suggest, but it's got a weird vibe around the game, man. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things with PlayStation. It's my overall thing with PSVR 2 where I'm still waiting to see an experience where I go, oh my God, I need to try that. I always thought there would be something like Spider-Man VR or whatever. I need to see something where it's being played where I need to do it. I did think that the original Firewall, like just watching clips of that where I was like, it is almost like a Rainbow Six Siege, but you're actually physically taking cover, like you're crouching down and like nailing headshots, and I was like, that's really cool. You're like bending the weapon like up and over cover to get the shot and everything. And there's more you can do with that, with the more advanced tracking, and like you said, with the finger tracking and everything.
Precisely.
So hopefully there's more too. I wonder if, because the original was sort of like this barely talked about thing that then suddenly spiked and was like one of the most essential VR games, if they're hoping for the same thing, they don't want to hype it too much or something.
Oh, I don't know, because that's maybe I'm being more critical of what we've seen so far, because I did love the original, like you said. It was this kind of out of nowhere hit that kind of like proved how good a multiplayer first person shooter VR game could be. Maybe I just kind of expect too much from the franchise because that was such a revelation for me personally. We have had a bunch of games that have done that same thing since. So I don't know. I don't really know what's going to go on.
We will keep an eye on it. Sea of Stars is out on the 29th of August. This is by far my most anticipated game. Just an absolutely gorgeous JRPG. It's made by Sabotage Studio, who did The Messenger, which is also one of my favorite 2D games, probably ever, to be honest. It's up there with Shovel Knight. It's one of those absolutely immaculate games. The Messenger itself is like one of my most... I can't recommend that game enough. It's like two games in one. It starts as like a standard sort of 2D action platformer, and about halfway through, it just becomes a Metroidvania. It just switches and all the level designs change. And then you're doing more like fetch questy type stuff to go and explore things in different ways and mop everything else up. There's a really cool time dynamic in there where you're going between all these different, you're going between the past and the future and the levels change and everything. It's just so effing cool. It's so well written. The music slaps. I love it. I love the studio so much. And Sea of Stars was just them going like, oh, we had a breakout hit. Messenger did really, really well. Let's do our dream JRPG. Let's do like a Chrono Trigger style JRPG with a really cool turn-based combat system. But you have all these different combo moves, so you're setting off different chains of attacks and everything. And the demo's out, I think, on every system, but I played it on Switch. Just beautiful, just absolutely beautiful. Exactly what you thought it would be. Just extremely well written, super charming. Like I said, gorgeous music, and I just can't wait for it. It's that style of JRPG, or that level of JRPG that hardly anyone actually fully hits. Even Octopath Traveler, for as much as I like both of those games, they don't have the party dynamic. Like you're moving, like you're doing one story at a time, and like Octopath probably is the most recommendable modern JRPG, but it's one of those things where, because they don't have the team all talking around a bonfire or whatever, they do have like some crossover team scenes, but they're like weirdly like vignettes. They sort of like darken the screen and have a couple of characters talk. It just doesn't feel right. Like in Final Fantasy, you're moving as a team. Like it needs to have that vibe, like a bunch of people on an adventure, Fellowship of the Ring style, and that's what Sea of Stars has, which is the missing part of Octopath, at least for me. But it's the gameplay, it's the presentation, it's just all that stuff. That's out on the 29th. I just can't wait.
Looks absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. Like, you know, watching some gameplay of it this morning and flicking through a bunch of trailers for it, like, visually, it's spectacular. Yeah. I loved all of the environments that we saw in the pre-release stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it looks, like, imaginative. It looks big. The scope seems massive. You describing it there as, like, the developer's dream game makes a lot of sense based on what I've seen so far. I hope it's really good for you.
Me too. That's only a couple of weeks away. Oh, no, like a month or so away. But Under the Waves is also out on the 29th of August, a game that only got shown off in the last sort of couple of months or so, it's one of those games that I was initially super intrigued by, and it's like a third person diving game, and it seems like it's a mystery thing. You play as a dude called Stan, and you're going underwater and finding all these different secrets and everything. I think that looks awesome, but at the minute, because it's mystery based, I'm like, I'm just gonna wait, and whatever you uncover down there, I'll just wait and see. But it seems like it's coming together really well. I think you also saw the trailers and stuff.
Really did. You know, when it was initially shown off earlier the month, and probably was announced before then, but you know, that's when it was first on my radar. Same. Which is the most important thing.
It is
not really, but Yeah, I thought it was really intriguing. You know, I don't know if it's going to be amazing, but it got me interested, especially in this year, which is kind of being defined by deep sea horror. You know,
I was going to say
Dredge. Well,
obviously there's Dredge, which predates the whole OceanGate sub stuff. But I feel like all the OceanGate stuff has only boosted anything underwater based. Like, there's that new thing on Netflix about going as deep as you possibly can.
Is there?
And I was like, you guys have just pulled the. You know that whole idea that Netflix always have the vault and they just put stuff out that like lines up with things. I feel like all the OceanGate stuff happened with the sub, and they were like, get something about depths, put that on Netflix, just do it. And there's another game, Dave the Diver, that keeps doing the rounds. It's not on console yet, but Dave the Diver is doing the rounds on Steam. And I just feel like diving horrors of the deep type stuff is kind of the year for it. Initially because of something like Dredge, but then obviously real life sort of made people interested in that idea anyway. But yeah, Under the Waves is out on the 29th. I think it's more of a personal story that as opposed to something you find down there. I don't think even necessarily think it's a horror, but that framing is still something that I just want to explore when I finally have time.
I saw that the Steam page like describes it as a game about grief, which I'm always here for. I know it's published by Quantic Dream. I don't think it's developed by Quantic Dream, but I was like, that's
the best thing they've put their name to in like a decade.
Hopefully. I hope it's really good. That's the one I'm going to be keeping a close eye on towards the end of the month in terms of maybe it being a breakout hit. Like, I know you shouldn't get this excited about games, but I'm kind of secretly hoping this is one of those sleeper critical darlings that, you know, just kind of becomes an instant game of the year list kind of contender. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's putting too much pressure on it. I think it's going to be mysterious and fascinating, even if it isn't, you know, a top tier game, just because of the setting, just because of the setup and what you're doing. It just seems like interesting enough and different enough to capture my attention.
Yeah, man, that's the thing. It's one of those ones where I hope it's like a 4 to 6 hour nice little designed to be finished game that just hits you really well and it stays memorable and everything. But yeah, that's something that's also on the same day as Sea of Stars, so I'm not going to touch it for like 2 months or something. We'll see. Speaking of things that we hope are good, Daymare 1994 Sandcastle is out on the 30th of August. I hadn't even heard of this game. You wrote it down. I checked out a trailer. It's like a third person. Almost, it reminded me a lot of Callisto Protocol.
Absolutely.
And I was like, I hope this is good. I want third person horror. Just please give me working third-person horror, please.
Like, the thing with this game is that the original Daymare was called, I think, Daymare 1998.
Daymare.
And I think it came out in 2020,
right.
and it didn't review well at all.
No.
Like, it got really mixed reviews, some absolute, just outright bad reviews, but I kind of wanted it to be good. So when this prequel, I think it is, was announced and a new trailer dropped yesterday over on the PlayStation channel, I kind of jumped in hoping for the best, and I was kind of impressed by what I saw. I thought the gameplay looked really interesting. It's like a cross, in my opinion, between Resident Evil 2. I mean, it's kind of literally just got the Resident Evil 2 menus, the item menus. But it kind of has like a bit of Mass Effect 2's gameplay in there, Mass Effect 3's gameplay.
Okay.
In my opinion, from the way the shooting looks and from some of the elemental attacks that you can kind of pull off against the enemies. So It looks a bit weird, it looks a bit janky, but sometimes, as has been proven this year, my favorite games are ones that look a bit weird and look a bit janky.
Yeah, so I think with the increasing exhaustive feel around the AAA space, like, it is nice to just rest, to relax into a game that is trying to be a 7 or 8 out of 10 that doesn't need that extra gloss, can just nail a set of mechanics. It reminds me a little bit of Evil West, where it's just like, you know exactly what you were making, and it's a bang on 8 out of 10.
It reminds me a little bit, tragically, of something like Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City, and I hope it doesn't err on that side of things.
No.
It manages to be more Resident Evil 2. So yeah, this is a fun one because it's not one that I have high expectations for at all.
Yeah.
But we'll be watching to see if it reviews well, and if it reviews better than the original did. I'm excited to kind of take the plunge on something a little bit strange.
Hopefully it can't be any worse than Callisto Protocol. That was an unbelievable letdown.
Well, here's the thing. At the very least, I think Daymare 1994 Sandcastle.
What a horrible name. What a horrible name.
But because of that horrible name, it doesn't look boring. Whereas the Callisto Protocol, for all of its faults, for all of the things it did kind of well, its main issue for me was that it was just boring.
Yeah.
Like, boring to play, boring presentation, boring story. And hopefully, even this, if this game is bad, it's not boring. It's bad in like an interesting way.
It gave me the Suffering vibes as well, which is one of my favorite games of all time that has just never made a comeback, never been re-released or whatever, but was a great horror game on the PS2. The last thing I had down, which doesn't have a release date, is just Crossfire Sierra Squad, which I think is another PSVR game?
It is. So I'll only briefly touch on this. For the two first-person shooting PSVR games that are coming out in August. Mm-hmm. This is the one that has my attention. As I'm led to believe, it's like a proper single-player first-person shooter. Oh. And from what they've showed off so far, it looks really explosive, it looks really tactile, it looks really engrossing. Mm-hmm. So this is the one that I do have high hopes for, whereas okay. I want to be pleasantly surprised by Firewall Ultra and for it to exceed my low expectations. This is the one I'm kind of banking on being good because I can't live in a world where both the first-person shooters for PSVR coming out in August are bad. So one of them at least has to be good, and I'm hoping it's this one because it's been ages since I played like a first-person shooter in VR that
since
has
Blood and Truth,
a robust story mode or single-player offering. Like Blood and Truth was really good, but even that had its limitations. Like it wasn't free roaming; you were pressing against cover that you were kind of warping to. You didn't have that full range of motion, and I hope this kind of gives you that. Because I'm beyond now the point-and-click movement in VR games. I want that full 360 kind of ability.
Same, warping to stuff in VR just absolutely sucks. Yeah. It's not a good thing. Yeah, I'm curious about the Crossfire name, because Crossfire X was that horrible thing that Remedy was sort of contractually asked to work on, and that I'm sure was delisted or deleted or whatever, because it sold so badly. And the Crossfire just isn't a thing over here, but I know that it's massive. I think it's in China that it's massive. There's some huge eastern region where it's just a big deal. It's kind of like their Call of Duty almost, and like they keep trying to make Crossfire work over here, and it just hasn't been able to take off, but maybe Sierra Squad is the one that at least does it for PSVR. But at the minute, it's TBA, so I don't know if it's all held up in all the various wranglings that mean it's just infinitely delayed or something. But we'll have to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, that's why I'm kind of a little bit worried, because obviously, you know, the trailers look really good, but the Crossfire name is not one that I put too much into after Crossfire X. Yeah, very, very good. So, like, maybe we do have a reality where both of these games are bad in August, but I'm going to end this podcast on a positive note.
Yes.
I hope that both of them isn't.
Yes, me too. You've got Blasphemous 2 and I've got Sea of Stars regardless, which we've both been massively looking forward to.
Exactly. Yeah. We've got something, and in this month of gaming free hits, you know, after I've played the likes of Fight Club the Game and Alone in the Dark 2008,
look,
anything is going to be amazing.
We don't talk about that in real life.
No.
That's your little special time, Fight Club, and getting all involved in those things. But yeah, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tailford.
As the coffee hits, I'll attempt to put sentences together, and we'll catch you later.
Bye.
Bye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run FutureTools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of Lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.